How's it going?
I'm okay.
Okay, good. All right, we're good. All right. Just having a little technical difficulties. The switchboard doesn't want to work today, but that's fine. We got you on. We're very pleased to have you on the show. Again, before we get started, we want to just give you kudos for that awesome Brian Dawkins column that you wrote for SI.com earlier.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Just now, obviously the Eagles fans. I'm going to put this on me. Am I overstating the case when I say that Brian Dawkins is the best Philadelphia Eagle for the past 20 years? Is that an overstatement?
Honestly, I think it's reasonable to say. I mean, I was having the discussion the other day. I think it's reasonable. You can make a reasonable argument that he's the greatest of all time.
Really?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, who do you put up there? Maybe who's in the discussion? Like Bednarik, Van Buren, Randall. I mean, who do you put? Who do you put above Dawkins compellingly? I mean, especially when you look at the fact that he holds the franchise record for games played, 183 games, and he was able to do it for so long. I mean, yeah, he was on the downside probably. I would even say from probably midway through the Super Bowl season on, he was probably sort of past his peak. But, the fact that he was able to sort of bring that energy and bring that leadership to the locker room again and again, people were sad to see him go, even though he played a pretty bad game in his last game here, I'm not really sure who you could put above him.
Now, Brian, I guess, do you think it, with Dawkins in particular, more than, you think it was the way that he, I guess, the persona that he relayed, because he just came off as, the guy that was, willing to, lay it all out on the field more than any Eagles player that I can remember. Obviously you think that played a factor, right, in his, love affair with the fans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Philly's always sort of had a, love affair with players like that. I think, an obvious comparison would be, AI, who I personally think, pound for pound is the best player ever. But you look at Dawkins, I think, this was a guy who did it sort of, I mean, with AI, he was very divisive. I don't think you can find many people in Philadelphia who had a problem with Dawkins, just for what he sort of represented and how he did it sort of always with class. I mean, even think about the way it ended here. Think about how it all went down and about that divorce and how messy it was. You look back, he's never said anything negative about Philadelphia. And, I think that's the sign of a real class act.
No, you're absolutely right with the Dawkins. Let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about boxing. We have a few people in the chat room with questions about the upcoming fights. Every time we have you on, we're going to ask you some variation of the following question, and you're probably going to have some variation of the answer that you're going to give us. Pacquiao Mayweather, we talked about this before. Well, you said that Pacquiao only has a handful of fights left before he, goes to run the Philippines, in a couple of years. Recently, they couldn't decide on the 50-50 split. Floyd wants more than 50-50. If you had to put money on it, will we ever see a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight?
I think, I've said 100% before. Maybe I'm down to 99. I think it's definitely going to happen. I think the sort of sticking point of that is it's going to happen long after it mattered. Meaning, and I think arguably if it happened tomorrow, it's after it mattered, after it was significant. I think they should have fought after Pacquiao knocked out Ricky Hatton in two rounds. That was the ideal time they should have met. Maybe Floyd's doing a little bit of what Sugar Ray Leonard did with Marvin Hagler as far as waiting a little bit till Pacquiao was sort of past his peak.
Right.
I think there's definitely signs Pacquiao is past his physical peak when you look at the fact that he's cramped up in his past two fights, didn't look particularly sharp against Marquez, who's a counterpuncher, and what's Floyd? Just a bigger, faster, sort of younger Marquez.
Right.
So I do think it will happen just because there's so much money at stake. I think the one thing that could possibly fast-track that fight is if Floyd loses on May 5th, if he loses in 10 days, then all of a sudden maybe that $40 million, $50 million becomes a little bit more attractive. But, I mean, the way it is right now, in the next 2 years, why would you fight, Manny Pacquiao for $40 or $50 million when you can fight the Victor Ortizes and Miguel Cotas of the world for a fraction of the risk and make, maybe $10 or $20 million less? It's not smart business.
No, you're exactly right. You bring up a good point. You said the fight could happen. There's a better chance the fight could happen if Floyd loses. If Floyd loses, doesn't that $50 million become $25 million, or doesn't it become $20 million? Like, isn't the allure gone at that point, or no?
It depends how he loses. I think that's a big that would be a big thing. I mean, and also it wouldn't happen immediately. I'm sure. I can't even confirm this. I haven't even looked into it, but I'm sure he would have just an automatic. There's a rematch clause in there.
Right.
And that of course would be a huge fight. You know, the rematch between those guys. So you know, all of a sudden, I mean, that's the shame, and that's the way boxing always, you know, sort of has been. But you know, just one night in the ring. I mean, Mike Tyson loses to Buster Douglas. That completely just changed everything, you know. So,
right.
I mean, that was a much bigger upset than what could possibly happen on May 5th or June 9th. You know, certainly with Bradley, who I think actually has a pretty good chance against Pacquiao.
Let's actually jump to that fight. I actually wanted to talk about Mayweather Cotto, but let's jump to Pacquiao Bradley. You know, Bradley's had a couple of decent wins in recent months. Is there a legitimate shot that he can pull off an upset on June 9th against Pacquiao?
Well, the odds makers say so. I mean, MGM has him as a 3-1 underdog. I can't remember the last time that a Pacquiao opponent was that close as far as sort of the odds makers. I'm not sure what it is now. That's what it was when it opened. But, you know, I mean, the guy, he's not very well known, certainly not among the casual fan, but, you know, he's a top-ranked guy. They signed him. They put him on the undercard of the Marquez fight. He actually fought Joel Casamayor, and he looked very bad doing it. It was just not a good showcase for him. But they gave him the fight anyway. You know, he's an undefeated guy. He's easy to sell. And who knows? I mean, he's sort of leads with his head a little bit. I know Pacquiao's worried about that, you know, because obviously that could change things. But, you know, I think Pacquiao's definitely going to try and get him out of there, because the last time he knocked a guy out, I believe, was December 2009, was it? Or it was the Miguel Cotto fight, so it was about five fights ago.
Okay.
You know, a bunch of decisions, you know, convincing ones, but, you know,
this
is a guy that sort of made his name on the explosive knockout and stuff. So I guess, you know, we'll just see. I think Bradley does have a chance, though.
And about the fight on May 5th, I'm a little concerned, and we have somebody in the chat room, you know, a little bit concerned. As a Mayweather fan, you know, are we right to be a little bit wary of this matchup against Cotto? I mean, Cotto's a very talented fighter.
Well, I look at the contract for the fight, and Floyd chose 8-ounce gloves for this fight, and I think that's an important thing to think about. It hasn't really been talked about a ton. Maybe it will as we get closer to it, but what it says to me is Floyd's going in there looking to knock the guy out. I think he wore, 10-ounce gloves for De La Hoya, which was his last fight at this weight, and I remember he was complaining afterwards that the gloves weren't giving him the same punching power he wanted. He didn't feel, I think his quote was that he could chop him up the same way he felt if he was wearing smaller gloves. So I know, obviously, with him having all the power in these negotiations, he chose 8-ounce gloves. And it tells me that he's going to be looking for a knockout for an exciting performance, which actually I think he's delivered his past two fights with Mosley and Ortiz. I think he's been as offensive as he's been in his career, really standing in the pocket.
Yeah,
but I think in this – I think in this fight – he is really going to I think he sees a guy in front of him that doesn't have a lot left, and I think he's going to try and take advantage of that.
We're live with Brian Armand Graham, writer for Sports Illustrated. Just a couple more boxing questions before we kind of move on to the fun stuff. on the undercard of the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, you know, there's Philly's Mike Jones, who puts his 26-0 record online for the IBF title. What can you tell our listeners? I don't think you know, outside of boxing fans, I don't think the name Mike Jones resonates a lot.
Other than the rapper.
Yes, other than the rapper, Mike Jones resonates a lot, even in this town. So what can you tell some of our listeners about Mike Jones, and how far is he away from a shot against a Mayweather or a Berto or a Pacquiao, those type of guys?
Well, it would likely be a Pacquiao because he's a top-ranked guy. Mike Jones is a Philadelphia fighter co-promoted by Russell Peltz, who's, you know, the preeminent Philly promoter. They brought him along very slowly, pretty much as slow as you could possibly bring along a guy, to the point where, you know, I believe he's 28 now. I mean, there's not much more they can do for him. Fortunately, his next fight is for this title, for an alphabet belt, which makes him, as far as a guy like Pacquiao, certainly a more attractive opponent. But, yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, I mean, look at who Pacquiao's fighting now. He's fighting a relatively unknown guy who is undefeated with a belt, you know. So I think that's exactly what we're looking at with Jones. You know, whether he's up for the challenge, you know, personally, the calendar might be sort of working in his favor, you know, if Pacquiao does win this fight. Maybe doesn't look great, but, I mean, the guy's 33. probably older than Floyd as far as mileage, because he's just been in so many wars. You know, maybe, you know, all champions lose. It's just it's a fact, and you know, with very, very few exceptions. So yeah, I mean, I think you know, who knows if he wins this fight, wins the belt. You know, maybe he will be in line for a shot against Pacquiao for Pacquiao's next fight or the one after.
Right. And just real quick, we had a B-Hop questions, but a quick question in the chat room. What do you think about Saul Alvarez? Kevin in the chat room asked about Saul Alvarez and how he's making his way up the ranks.
I mean, I think it's very interesting how Alvarez has more fights at 21 as the youngest world champion in the world than Floyd does in his entire career at 35. I mean, I don't know who he's fighting down there. But yeah, no, it's he's a very exciting guy. I think he probably hasn't necessarily blown people away his past two or three fights like, you know, the Golden Boys, Oscar De La Hoya probably was hoping for. But the truth is they see him as the next sort of De La Hoya type.
Okay.
If he wins this, you know, just sort of as far as the appeal that sort of crosses the borders. Unfortunately, he doesn't speak English yet. Hopefully they're working on that. But he's kind of a funny looking guy. Definitely sort of a crowd pleasing style in general. He's young. Certainly it's all in front of him. And I think if he wins this fight, he's definitely a possibility. Floyd says at this point he's fighting 6 months, every 6 months. There's no more of this Super Bowl stuff, you know, once a year. He says he's on a regular fighting schedule now, so there's a very good chance that he could be Floyd's first fight when he gets out of his little vacation at the Nevada State Prison.
Earlier we talked about the one Philly fighter, Mike Jones. Obviously there's a big, well, big to us match in Atlantic City this weekend. Bernard Hopkins, who squares off against Chad Dawson in AC. Last time, you know, they fought, obviously, you know, everybody remembers what happens. Dawson kind of dropped Hopkins on the shoulder, you know, separated the shoulder. It eventually became, you know, a technical draw, I believe, or no contest between the two. I doubt that happens again, even though this is boxing. I doubt that happens in the second time around. I'm seeing odds in favor of Dawson 4-1. Is it that much of a disparity between the two, or?
I mean, I haven't seen the odds. That seems like a lot to me. But I will say the truth is, I've learned better than to pick against Bernard. But the truth is that I've ever since this fight sort of made logical sense, probably around 2007, 2008, when Bernard first came up to light heavyweight. This was a matchup I never, ever liked for Bernard. Then this is going back more than 5 years now. I never really liked the matchup of this taller guy that's very well-schooled, doesn't get intimidated, you know, has so far at least seemed sort of immune to, like, Bernard's sort of psychological warfare. I personally think Bernard would have a better chance against, say, an Andre Ward. Who's a top 5 or 6 pound for pound guy than this Dawson guy, who isn't really even the pound for pound rankings at all. It's just, you know, styles make fights in boxing.
Right.
This is a tough matchup, and you know, I haven't even decided who I'm picking in this fight yet, but I'm concerned. I think it's a very difficult fight.
No, I would agree. I really, like you said, I don't like the fight for Hopkins. And again, I mean, you know, Hopkins was supposed to retire, what, 4 or 5 years ago now, and he's still kind of hanging on. And I just don't like the Chad Dawson matchup. Again, 4-1 seems high to me, but I just don't like it. It's just something about it just doesn't kind of, I don't know, smell right to me.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's never been beaten up, you know. He's never been stopped, certainly. I will argue till I'm blue in the face when people say Bernard Hopkins should retire. When we last did our pound-for-pound rankings, I put him at number 7. That's higher than sort of most people. Most people have him probably around between 9 and 11, but I have him at number 7. Pretty much because anyone you put in front of him, you know, he's going to make it a competitive fight at the least. And if that means sort of bringing it down to his level, I think Bernard fights up or down to the person in front of him.
That's true. I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with that. Just one last fighting question. Chris is kind of chomping at the bit. He's got like 17 music questions he wants to ask you about Nas and the Tupac hologram. So, all right, UFC 145. You were down there in Atlanta this weekend.
I was. It was kind of, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you what was the atmosphere?
What was the external atmosphere for a UFC fight in Atlanta? Like, I don't know. It must have been unique to say the least.
Well, I'm very I would consider myself probably a neophyte when it comes to the MMA world. You know, I'm not there very often. I edit the section among some other responsibilities for SI. But I was sent down, you know, kind of as a backup, and you know, it was a good. It was a fight between John Jones, who's considered, you know, the next big thing in that sport. You know, he's only 24 years old. He's probably not going to lose for a really long time. The fight itself was very much like a Mayweather fight in that, you know, he was just so much better than his opponent, Rashad Evans, that there really just wasn't that much excitement. There was a little booing in the fourth round. You know what I mean? It was just that one-sided. As far as the atmosphere, to tell you the perfect truth, it wasn't much different. The first fight, this was my third. The first one I went to was 101 in Philadelphia, actually.
Okay.
And yeah, it was probably not that different from down there. I think one of the main reasons is people travel. I was sitting at a bar next to somebody on Friday night that had driven from Ontario, Canada, for the fight. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I think a lot of people travel for these events. So in that sense, you know, certainly there's probably a little regional flavor wherever they go. But, you know, it's a crowd that, at least in the three events I've been to, two in the Northeast and now one in the South, there hasn't been a marked difference between sort of the crowd.
Oh, yeah. And, Brian, like, the boxing stuff is fun and all. But, like, today I was, like, happily rewarded when I looked on SI's homepage and I see, yeah, our guest for the show, yeah, he was hanging out with Nas talking about, like, I don't know, his soundtrack for the NFL draft. How did that go down?
Well, I wasn't hanging out with him, unfortunately. I only got him over the phone.
Okay.
So not to spoil it, I could have played it up a little bit. But our NFL editor, he knows I do, you know, a lot of the music stuff. You know, another bit of a sort of downer was I was trying to get Questlove for that Dawkins thing yesterday, but it fell through. I mean, he knows that I, you know, am able to sort of get some of these guys sometimes. So he just thought that I could reach out to him. And I was able to get him probably within 3 or 4 hours of me emailing the rep at Warner Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't have been nicer. Our connection was actually pretty bad, which was, you know, he was very high energy and sort of had a lot to say about everything I was asking him for about, you know, 20 or 30 minutes. He was, you know, very nice. He was, you know, sort of laughed when I talked about what it was like coming up as a Yankee fan in Queens. You know, mm-hmm. Very diplomatic, you know, gave me his pick to win the NBA championship, thinks the Thunder are going to win, sort of loves the way they play team
okay.
ball. You know, he was a very nice guy, and I'm, you know, I definitely wish him well with the new record.
Yeah, and I saw that he was joking about years ago when he blasted Kobe. So, I guess he said him and Kobe share the same, life experiences, I guess.
Yeah, and then he danced around it, and then he was just like, divorce. And then he just said divorce, just like that, and he just started laughing very hard. So, yeah, I mean, you go back and read the lyrics of those songs. It's pretty, of that song in particular, These Are Our Heroes. And it was pretty, you know, he definitely took it to him, and it definitely took Shaq's side in the Shaq-Kobe feud. But he says he has, Kobe's definitely earned his respect over the years, and he definitely, you know, was trying to patch that up.
Yeah, now Brian, can you still believe that Nas is still, like, I don't know, like, still, like popping albums out? Like, I don't know, because, like, I always thought that, like, he was, like, the kind of guy that would throw out a couple classic records and kind of just fade away, but it seems like he's been plugging along. Like, I mean, obviously, like, he'll never reach an Illmatic or a Stillmatic or something like that, but he still puts out reasonably good music.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. You know, it's certainly, I mean, sometimes I feel I get it skewed, certainly living up in New York, but even living in the Northeast, you know, maybe, I'm not sure what his national reach is as far as the radio play, but I mean, the stuff gets played, you know, it's definitely classic music, and I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, the lifespan of a rapper is, you know, very short relative to other musicians, so it's impressive. I mean, this is his 10th full-length album coming out, and, you know, since 1994, so 10 and 18 years, you know, you could do a lot worse than that.
Yeah, like, speaking of 1994, so someone was alive back then, but he actually, like, rose from the dead the last couple of weeks, like, via, like, some pixels. Like, I don't know, like, so, like, what do you think about this whole, like, one, like, I don't know, like, Dre and Snoop probably, like, stealing, like stealing the limelight at Coachella, and this whole Tupac hologram, like, do you think it's been a little overblown? Because I saw that, like, because I think Google, like, it was, like, 67, like, million hits on, like, Tupac hologram. I mean, like, one, like, I don't know, like, do you think that, like, this hologram is as cracked up as it should be?
Yes.
Well, I'll make a prediction.
Here we go.
I hope you're recording.
This is recording for all eternity.
It's coming out next month. Say that.
No, you have not seen the last of these holograms.
I think
you go down to FedEx Forum in Memphis, you could sell out tickets for an Elvis show in 15 minutes. You know, you go right down the line of the dead rock stars. I mean, there's probably only a few it would initially work with. But I mean, I believe I read somewhere it cost in the range. I mean, this is 4 minutes we're talking about.
Right.
You know, obviously it probably costs more to do a sort of a bigger show. But I mean, you know, you look at the investment of that. You know, I think it costs something like $100,000 to $200,000 to do that, which is a lot. But you know, look at the legs it got. I mean, I think it's more than worth that for those guys as far as you know the. As the publicity. So, you know, I think it really, who knows if it's something that will, you know, stick in the long term beyond that, but I definitely think just based on the success and sort of the buzz of this, like, you have not seen the last of the hologram.
Now, Brian, I've been telling Roy that this is a prelude to the most longest-awaited album since, like, Chinese Democracy. Is Detox going to be released this year? It has to be.
No.
I mean, you got a better chance of seeing Mayweather Pacquiao this year than Detox. You definitely see that fight before you see Detox. I'll say that.
Let me just one more hologram. I can't let this hologram thing go because I am so intrigued by this. It's not even funny. I don't know if you saw the link that I sent you, the Trapped in the Closet podcast on Grantland, but during the podcast they actually talked about having a hologram of the entire Trapped in the Closet like series. Like a hologram I think that would be the greatest thing ever. I know you would pay for it.
It's gonna be like, what dead person can we bring up musically?
You don't,
like,
you don't
like, do we need to bring up like Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon?
No, but
do you want to see the Shannon Hoon? Like,
yeah,
I don't
R. Kelly. I'm telling you, like R. Kelly trapped in the hologram, trapped in the closet hologram concert. tell me that won't sell out.
You know, honestly, I think R. Kelly trapped in the hologram would be great. I would like him to just take care of these new chapters first, which are scheduled to come out this year, and then we can move on to the next thing. But I'm definitely looking forward to the new Trapped in the Closet chapters. And listen, there's no need for a hologram for Kells, you know, as long as he's still with us, fortunately.
No, but you are talking to probably the biggest R. Kelly fan in, like, the media, probably. So, I actually did take your advice and, like, listen to, like Love Letter. It's a great album. It really is a good album.
It is. It's definitely a different feel than some of his more recent music. It's much more of like a classic sort of throwback, and I like it. I was into it. I was into the whole thing. Now, are you going to go on the Love Letter cruise? Have you looked into that?
That was my question, and I'm going to tell you. That markup on that cruise is very expensive. It's like some ridiculous amount of money. And not only that.
Is R. Kelly going to be on the cruise?
Yeah, he's on the cruise.
Come on, of course.
You're only guaranteed to hear him one night. Like, you are guaranteed for one concert, but I think he's performing on three nights. That's the thing. Like, I might get caught with the wrong, because I don't know if it's gonna be like Raunchy Kelly or like Love Letter Kelly or Trapped in the Closet. I don't know which Kelly.
Yeah, man. Are you getting a public announcement Kelly or like Love Letter Kelly?
I don't think it's worth it.
Go on the website and look up the activities section. That's the only recommendation I'm gonna give you, and you will be into it. You can do the 12-play basketball tournament. You can do everything.
Actually, just one last question before we let you go. Again, we're talking music with you. Is there any music? You know, we just had Coachella. Is there any music? Any new bands that you're kind of listening to that you know might not be at the top of the charts yet, but are kind of coming soon? I know you talked about Azalea Banks from New York. Anybody
yeah,
else?
I mean, I was going to bring up Azalea Banks. I think she really, especially at Coachella, she really sort of had a breakout performance there, biggest show of her career to date, and she did it well. She doesn't even have an album out yet. She just has that single, 212, from last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Azalea Banks. Other than that, the rock band, The Men, I'm into. They got an album called Open Your Heart. That's a pretty good one. Very sort of hard rock, but 70s sort of feel to it. Other than that, I can't really think of anything on the spot.
Now, Brian, what do you think about the new Jack White album? I mean, like, it's definitely doesn't sound like White Stripes-esque, but I thought it was like I gave it a listen today. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. I'm actually, he's kind of coming around a little bit. I think I'm going to catch him up here at the Roseland Ballroom. But he's touring it a little bit. I think it was on SNL maybe even. I'm not sure. I know he's kind of making the rounds with it. And yeah, I like it. I think it's pretty good. You know, I'm hearing it on the radio a little bit. I mean, obviously, I mean, the White Stripes were one of my favorite bands, you know, of my lifetime. You know, I was definitely sad to see them go. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad to see that sort of he's moving on as far, you know, artistically beyond. I know his other band, the Raconteurs, I was into them, but they sort of slowed down a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I guess this is the next step.
Brian Army Graham, writer for Sports Illustrated. Check out his work on SI.com. Check him out on Twitter as well. His handle is Brian A. Graham. Brian, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
We appreciate it.
Always, guys.
That was Brian Armagram from Sports Illustrated. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some NBA with Kwame Fisher-Jones from Backpage Sports and Bleacher Report. You're listening to The Broad Street Line here on Blog Talk Radio.